It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy, at last. I will never understand the magic. Booted up a little bit ago, everything was golden, went to start everything up, nothing. No audio, well, never mind. We're not going to get into the technical weeds this early in the program. We're just not going to do it. No. Suffice to say, I had to reboot, so we're about 6 minutes late getting started on this program for Wednesday, the 22nd day of January 2020. Under ordinary circumstances, it would be prayer meeting Wednesday, and we'll probably stumble into some prayer meeting Wednesday material somewhere during the program. But of course, you and I, we happy few. Yes, Tony. As a matter of fact, I am in petulant pink today.
Yes.
Otherwise known as one of my last clean t-shirts, pink. Yeah. One of my favorite colors, too, anyways. And, you know, kind of matches. Look, it matches. Now, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. I'm moderating madly away all by my lonesome over there right now. And, pop on by and you'll be immediately greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Hoghead and Squeaky. You just pick yourself out a screen name and a password and jump in and see what the conversation's all about. So, that's one thing you can do at the website. Of course, HeadOn.live is your one-stop shop for all your podcasting needs, and it's also the most reliable access to the audio stream. So let's not just... I've got the White Rose stream going. I don't know if it's working or not, because I haven't had a note from Brother Deacon Asa along those lines. He did tell me third time was the charm for getting things running. So, you know, thank heaven for small favors in that regard. Oh, yeah, see, there it is. Hot on Facebook and Head On Live, White Rose Society, pining for the fjords. And that raises a little moment of irony, and I have to be careful about the things I say on this program because, you know, last night I likened watching what Moscow Mitch McConnell is doing to the Constitution of the United States and the Senate of the United States. I likened that to the sad business of watching a loved one pass. And I never knew the man, but I wake up this morning, and what happens? Terry Jones, of Monty Python fame, who had been suffering for years with dementia, passed away in the last 24 hours. And it's worth mentioning the great, the powerful, delightful contributions he made to our ability to laugh over the last 40, 45, 50 years or more. He directed or co-directed both Monty Python and the Holy Grail and Monty Python's Life of Brian. We had a lot of young people in the cast of the play recently, and some of us who are of an age were chuckling about it, because Monty Python fans have we've always got a. There's always a side reference, a tangential reference, and we just got these sort of blank stares from young people who had never heard of Monty Python. And what a bereft little world. But times change. And I guess there's all kinds of other stuff out there to sure. But lo and behold, I was talking about watching The Death of the Constitution, which is what we're watching right now. And at the same time, equating it with the death of a loved one. And then lo and behold, Terry Jones passes away. Damn it. But anyway, every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude. This program is no different. And so thanks go out to our subscribers for this 22nd day of the month. That would be thanks to Michael and Tarani and Felicia, formerly of Nebraska, now of California, Bill in Florida, and Jamie. Thank you all very kindly. And Robin. Robin jumped in just shortly before airtime, so I can happily announce that our fundraising goal is down to $415 as we have this program and then two more here before I make my way back up into the frozen hellscape hills of almost level west by Trump, west by cold Trump, Virginia, because Agnes told me it was just hateful there this morning. And I know for a fact it was because I checked on the little weather what's-its thingy. And there at home, it was 12, which meant at best it was about 30 in the bedroom. Because when you get down into those low 20s and high teens, it's like the walls disappear. It's like fucking camping. Who am I kidding? But that's it's Saturday. Saturday, we're all packed up and away from here. So that will... And then I've got Sunday to get the studio in order and get something in line to stream the program. And then hopefully on Monday, back to it right there from the fabulous Horn Studios in the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. Yes. But a couple more days here in the at least sunny, not so frigid south. I think we're all the way up to 40 degrees right now. By God, it's nearly Speedo weather down here. The horror, especially with the video going, right? Yeah, that's right. That's right. If we don't knock out some of this fundraising goal, I may be forced to. I can't even bear the thought. No, I think the white balance on the camera would probably just burn out. Yeah, you don't want me doing that. So anyway, we've got thanks to Robin jumping in. The fundraising goal's down to $415, and it sure would be nice if we could take out, say, 215 of that, so that we'd actually have Monday and Tuesday taken care of, and the last $15 from, 12 days ago. But we'll just see how that plays out over time. We'll have some conversation this evening, I trust, depending on what is on your mind. And right now, even as we speak, of course, the House managers are making a profound case. And we know they're making a profound case because an hour or so ago, a dozen maggot senators... make America graft again. Trump supporters, maggot senators, maggots. A dozen maggots stomped out of the Senate chambers. I guess because they didn't like what they were hearing, because what they were hearing was the facts. I've been absolutely mesmerized watching the proceedings today. Adam Schiff is a profoundly talented lawyer and a damn good prosecutor. So is Gerald Nadler. So is Representative Garcia Representative Jason Crow presenting part of the case now. It got so bad last night that the Nitwit Nero's legal team, I mean, really, this is they got so upset that they did everything short of calling the House managers poopy heads. But I have a memory, and I remember when people like Asa Hutchinson of Arkansas and Lindsey Graham from South Carolina, mercy, that was before he became such good friends with John McCain. I remember when they were House managers during the Great Cleanest Hunt, and they were really bad. Oh, it was pathetic. Of course, they didn't have much in the way of material. Well, we're going to remove this here president from being a president because, well, because blowjob. It was pitiful. And you know, meanwhile, you had Kenneth Starr over there sitting in the corner playing with himself while reading the more salacious aspects of his report with young, back then, Brett Kavanaugh, probably beer-bonged halfway out of his brains going, yes, master, yes, yes, sanctuary. It's an entirely different team here with these House managers. They are methodical. If this was an episode of Perry Mason or Matlock, Donald Trump would have already stood up in the back of the room and said, all right, I'm fucking guilty, okay? You got me. Unfortunately, this isn't Matlock. And the fate of the Constitution itself is at stake. Let's check in for just a minute and see what Representative Crow is up to.
20th, and on that date, OMB modified the footnote. These emails are almost entirely redacted. However, all the subsequent footnotes issued by OMB during the pendency of the hold removed the sentence regarding DOD's ability to fully obligate the funds by the end of the fiscal year. Nevertheless, OMB continued to implement the hold at the president's direction.
Yeah, and just to put this in context, what Representative Crow is talking about is, of course, the Ukraine aid, which the Nitwit Nero regime withheld while Ukrainians fought and bled and died. Contrary to the will of the Congress and the will of the people of the United States. And he's gone over in great detail before airtime. He went over in great detail the step-by-step-by-step corruption that went into Chlamydia Claudius's attempt to strong-arm and otherwise extort the Ukrainian government into, you know, engaging in political filth for his benefit. So we will probably be returning to that, to the proceedings in fairly short order, but there's a little bit of catching up that we should probably do. Because among other things, I mean, all of these managers are doing a fantastic job. I mean, it's the kind of lawyering that young lawyers entering their, you know, first semester of law school dream of someday doing, the methodical, analytical, inexorably logical, irrefutable, pounding presentation of facts and law. In other words, nothing that a Republican lawyer would ever be capable of. And I was reminded of something that I saw earlier, because there will be many throughout all of this. There will be many moments to discuss the impacts of these proceedings on the rest of our attempts to remain a self-governing republic. With every attempt to prevent charges against Nitwit Nero, Mitch McConnell does a little bit more harm to the future of our republic. But people like Adam Schiff are doing yeoman masterful work. And so consequently, I had to check real quick. Adam Schiff is in his 10th two-year term in the House of Representatives. In other words, he is in the 20th year of his public service. Well, that in turn got me to thinking about a tweet that I saw recently. A tweet from a political amateur and someone who really doesn't have much in the way of either experience or understanding of how government works. Apparently he's got a lot of understanding about how to grub for money, but grubbing for money is not the same thing as understanding the nature of our civic system. But I got to think, and it's not just one, it's two. There are two candidates, and I'm kind of violating here my proscription against gooning on any of the Democratic field. But I think in this particular instance, if you are engaged in advocating this particular issue, you're only the most thinly nominally a Democrat. And I'm speaking of Tom Steyer and, of course, Andrew Yang. And in particular, Andrew Yang, back on the 19th of January, 3 days ago, tweeted the following. Oh, my God, I did that. I did not mean what that means, okay? Just let's be clear. Andrew Yang said, "I'm for 12-year term limits for members of Congress, and I know how to get it passed. Exempt current lawmakers. They would pass it immediately, and we would have a more aligned and dynamic legislature in no time." This is some fascinatingly sloppy word salad. I mean, I don't know what he even means by a more aligned and dynamic legislature, as opposed to a condenser legislature that requires 48 volts of phantom power. And I don't know if he means that he just wants every member of Congress to run for Congress once and they're all in there for 12 years and then, you know, the devil take the hindmost. I'd like to hope he doesn't mean that. That's a hell of a lot of Constitution amending there, but I think he just means that nobody should be in Congress for more than 12 years. And what an unutterably stupid thing to suggest. It goes to prove once again that being able to grub money does not equate with the ability to think meaningfully about how government works. Because term limits are the, as we've discussed before on this program, term limits are the absolute antithesis of any idea of democracy such as we have it. And remembering that here in the United States of America, democracy is far more aspirational than operational. We've never been particularly good at it. But in this particular instance, term limits, it means that, you know, let's say you've got an Adam Schiff. Well, under the glorious leadership of Andrew Yang, there would be no further Adam Schiffs in the future. Or Zoe Lofgren's. because there would be an artificial cutoff. You know, 12 years, sorry, got to go. Doesn't matter how good you are. Wait a minute. You just learned how to do this. Let's get you out of here. How is it that we can talk about something as fundamentally idiotic as term limits within a governmental structure? Imagine saying that about, an engineer at Apple or Microsoft or SpaceX. Imagine saying that about a CEO or the founder of a company. You've just founded a genius company and it's changing the culture. And my goodness gracious, it's the best thing that ever happened to capitalism since capital. Oh, sorry, 12 years, you're going to go. What? We're just getting this thing going. There's a great future. Oh, I'm sorry, it's 12 years. You got to go. Term limits. And nobody in the business world would sit there, you know, nobody in the realm in which, you know, Tom Steyer and Andrew Yang are supposed to be such geniuses would ever think that was a good idea. But you walk in and you've got absolutely no goddamned idea how government works whatsoever. And you're saying, you know what we need? We need some term limits. And we'll just let them grandfather themselves in, and then everybody else had it. Did he even think before he tweeted that? I mean, at one point in time, I engaged in the subtle. Okay, not so subtle. I engaged in the fantasy that maybe he meant well. Probably needed a little more seasoning, needed a little more grow up time, but you know, maybe he meant well. Eesh. But with that kind of horrible thinking, you'd have this bad lawyering on the Democratic side of this impeachment non-trial, as you've got over there on the presidential side, you know, where you've got jerk off Jay Sekulow and pitiful Pat Cipollone and Pam Blondie Bondi, who I think are engaged while this is all going on, they're just sitting over there on the other side trying to figure out how it is that whole tic-tac-toe thing works. What do you like to play a game? But that intersection between that idea that's being... And the problem is, When somebody like a Tom Steyer or an Andrew Yang and his Yang gang are out there, yeah, term limits, you betcha. It's idiotic. It's unconscionable. It is self-eliminating from a political standpoint. I mean, there's a good one. Dave and Michael Jordan. I'm sorry, Mr. Jordan. You've been in the league 10 years. You got to go. Oh, wait a minute. LeBron James, 10 years in the league. Got to go. Term limits. But somehow screwing the government makes people feel good because there's been this multi-generational effort, and it was identified eons ago, before I was even born, by Richard Hofstadter in his seminal work, The Paranoid Style in American Politics, of government hating. So you got a bunch of knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing goobers who have no idea how government works, but they walk around, you know what, I don't trust my government. Yeah. And so things like this get traction out among the hoi polloi. Well, thank you, Faith. Faith in the Facebook group says, love how Bob's taking on the stupid idea of term limits. Excellent points. Thank you. I didn't need to hear that, but hell, there are people in the NBA who are flat earthers, but Ron and Raleigh pointing out, did you know you can never tell who fall for bullshit? Dave Chappelle is a member of the Yang Gang. Oh, I know. I have friends who are members of the Yang Gang, and they just can't be dissuaded. He can't say anything quite stupid enough to get them to look up and go, hey, he's stupid. Term limits, says James in Illinois. Who is Steyer more concerned about, Mitch McConnell or Bernie Sanders? Good question. It is a sword that cuts in both directions. So it's just kind of a starting place to consider what it is and it's supposed to be a cutting edge idea, these goddamn term limits. I mean, we impose term limits on the presidency, and it remains to this day the worst thing that we have done to the Constitution in the latter half of the 20th century. We amended the Constitution in the latter half of the 20th century to give 18-year-olds the vote. Good idea. But also in the latter half of the 20th century, we amended the Constitution to make sure that no matter how good a president is, that president can only serve two terms. Or no matter how desperate the times are, that the president leading us through it can only serve two terms. Horrible idea. Remains a horrible idea. Because there will come a time. I would suggest to you that that time has already come and gone. Look, were it not for the term limits on the presidency, we never would have had the nightmare years of George W. Bush. Think about that. We would not have had a man who took a report that was entitled "Bin Laden Determined to Strike in U.S." and passed it off while he went to cut brush in Texas. But for the term limits on the presidency, we quite likely would not have had George W. Bush taking a report on the sieve-like insecurity at the nation's airports in, say, March of 2001, and handing it off to a guy whose nickname was Brownie, whose claim to fame was his expertise in Arabian horses. No shit. Remember, because that happened. Long memory here. Could have just had a third term of William Jefferson Clinton. Best Republican president this country has had in the last 50 years. Now, I don't know how Michelle would have felt about it, but I think had it been possible for Barack Obama to run for a third term as president, this country would have clamored for it. Term limits are a horrible idea. And I know there are some people say, yeah, but what about a possible, I mean, what if Donald Trump got a third term? Donald Trump will not live to see a third term. Ronald Reagan would not have been a threat for a third term because by the time Ronald Reagan was finishing his second term, he couldn't tell the difference between his goddamn morning oatmeal and his fucking wife. He was gone. So, three terms is hard, but sometimes you have to, the impulse, and remember, the term limitation of the presidency was brought on by a bunch of butthurt, pissed off Republicans who had just spent a generation getting their ass handed to them every time they turned around by FDR, and they wanted to make sure that they could never get that again. So they had to tilt the playing field to make sure that maybe sometime we'd have to have some shitheel Republican in the Oval Office. And lo and behold, it seems like every time they get a second term, they get them. A Republican gets a second term, and you get Nixon's second term. And Reagan's second term with Iran-Contra. And his slow, inexorable slide into madness to the point that he's wandering around saying that ketchup is a vegetable while he himself was becoming one. We damn sure didn't let H.W. Bush have a second term, did we? We gave W one. Well, not really, because neither the election of 2000 nor the election of 2004 were on the up and up. They were both dummied up. In Florida first and in Ohio later. Steve in New York asking, what if Trump got a third term? As we have said repeatedly, democracy is a double-edged sword. The people who are to praise for the good, but they're to blame for the bad. But we live on a roasting planet. And look what the term limits on the presidency did to us in that regard. We wouldn't be out of the Paris Climate Accords if Obama was in the third term. As Ron and Raleigh puts it, term limits are no solution. Imagine, if you will, some young politician is taken aside by a billionaire. The billionaire says to the young politician, son, I'll fund your campaign to the tune of $1 bazillion. All you have to do is follow my agenda, and I'll see to it you're covered for the rest of your life. Too much easy money out there to trust the integrity of Republicans in particular. And then there's the other aspect of that is the fact that you create a revolving door so that there's no expertise in the legislatures. And as California has taught us, that means that the lobbyists then actually do all the meaningful legislating, and the term-limited little assholes in the legislature just vote on shit. Not a hell of a lot of statesmanship in that. But that was just one of the things. And my thoughts on this were all occasioned just watching the profound talent of this team of managers in the House. Let's check in for a moment with Val Demings of Florida.
However, Ambassador Sondland was not deterred. He convened a second meeting where he discussed what needed to happen before an Oval Office meeting. Apparently, Ambassador Sondland had...
This whole day, by the way, has been an exercise in bringing the receipts.
And he was determined to carry them out. Bolton sent Dr. Hill to join that meeting and report back, and this is what Dr. Hill had to say.
And so when I came in, Gordon Sondland was basically saying, well, look, we have a deal here that there will be a meeting. I have a deal here with Chief of Staff Mulvaney. There will be a meeting if the Ukrainians open up or announce these investigations into 2016 in Burisma. And I cut it off immediately there. Because by this point, having heard Mr. Giuliani over and over again on the television and all of the issues that he was asserting, by this point, it was clear that Burisma was code for the Bidens because Giuliani was laying it out there.
After the meeting, Dr. Hill followed up with Ambassador Bolton and relayed what transpired. Bolton was alarmed. In other words, Ambassador Bolton didn't want any part of it. He directed Dr. Hill to brief the NSC's top attorney, John Eisenberg, as she explained during her hearing.
What was that specific instruction?
The specific instruction was that I had to go to the lawyers, to John Eisenberg, our senior counsel for the National Security Council, to basically say, you tell Eisenberg, Ambassador Bolton told me, that I am not part of this whatever drug deal that Mulvaney and Sondland are cooking up.
What did you understand him to mean by the drug deal that Mulvaney and Sondland were cooking up?
I took it to mean investigations for a meeting.
Did you go speak to the lawyers?
I certainly did.
Senators, as a former chief of police, I think it's quite interesting that Ambassador Bolton categorized the corrupt scheme, the pressure campaign, as a, quote, drug deal. I think that Ambassador Bolton was trying to send us a very powerful message. a message that not only would the lawyers, the top lawyer, understand, but that every person would understand. Every member of the House, every member of the Senate, every member of our great country, every citizen. And Ambassador Bolton also wanted to make clear, especially to the top attorney, that he did not want to have anything to do with a drug deal in progress. But we do know. We know now, of course, that Ambassador Bolton can testify directly about this. He can testify directly for himself about this meeting if he appears before this body, as he has indicated that he is prepared to do if this body is willing to issue a subpoena. We need to hear from Ambassador Bolton, and I know the American people want to hear from Ambassador Bolton.
Yeah, to the tune of like 70% of the American people.
Dr. Hill testified that she spoke to Mr. Eisenberg twice. Dr. Hill also indicated that Mr. Eisenberg took notes of their meeting, which we, to no surprise now, do not have. We have not received because of the president's obstruction. It's clear Ambassador Sondland was not operating a rogue operation. He testified that everyone was in the loop. Let's listen once again.
Everyone was in the loop. It was no secret. Everyone was informed via email on July 19th, days before the presidential call. As I communicated to the team, I told President Zelensky in advance that assurances to run a fully transparent investigation and turn over every stone were necessary in his call with President Trump.
In the email referenced, Ambassador Sondland wrote the following to Secretary Pompeo, Secretary Perry, and Mr. Mulvaney regarding President Zelensky. He is prepared to receive POTUS's call. We'll assure him that he intends to run a fully transparent investigation and will turn over every stone.
You know, I'm grateful for the fact that there's going to be a historical record of this. Because at some point in time, when constitutional governance in this country is dead, because Mitch McConnell is killing it, historians will need to have the ability to look back at this and wonder how it is that the American people let this happen to them. And there will be a lot of time spent sorting it out. And there will be a lot of questions asked and hands wrung and pearls clutched. But in the end, it will have a lot to do, a great deal to do, with our failure to teach how our government works that started in about the mid-80s, in the middle or toward the end of the first term of old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan. Again, not a boating accident. Republicans cannot succeed unless they can impose ignorance on the American people. And that is that has been their project since Reagan took office. You know, we can look back at the ancients and we can say that the Roman Republic began falling apart when Gaius Marius started serving, when he served more than one term as consul, and the power struggles between he and Sulla and people like Carbo through that otherwise stable governing system into absolute chaos. We can point to that moment and we can say, right there. Well, a few million years from now, who knows? The six-foot-tall race of sentient cockroaches who worship us as gods may look at Ronald Reagan and say, right there, it begins right there. But there's other stuff going on besides these impeachment hearings. Obviously, these are the most important things going on. But ancillary to them, with the emphasis on the word silly, are the things that are taking place around them. And this, oh my God. Let's start with Chlamydia Claudius, still over in Davos, Switzerland, at the World Economic Forum, swanning around with our betters over there. Well, the CNBC sent somebody over there to cover the disaster, the walking disaster that is Donald Trump. And they asked him about things like, electric cars. This is a real sit-down interview. This is not a parody. This is not a joke. This isn't somebody who does a really, really good Donald Trump impression. Those of you familiar with the program will know you'll know that this is probably a moment for reaching for the hockey puck and the duct tape. Just take the hockey puck and right here, so you won't bother the neighbors. What about those electric cars, President Trump? Look for a soft place to land, because we're about to accelerate to maximum stupid. Warp stupid. Breathtaking stupidity.
Tesla's now worth more than GM and Ford. Do you have comments on Elon Musk?
Well, you have to give him credit. I spoke to him very recently, and he's also doing the rockets. He likes rockets, and rockets. He does good at rockets, too, by the way. I never saw where the engines come down with no wings, no anything, and they're landing. I said, I've never seen that before. And I was worried about him because he's one of our great geniuses, and we have to protect our genius. You know, we have to protect Thomas Edison, and we have to protect all of these people that...
These last few days, I've deliberately stayed away from the liquor store. Tequila is cheap down here. Swirly straws are easily obtained. And we've got... You heard that? I didn't hear that by myself. You heard it too. That's why I played it. Wanted to make sure that it wasn't some old acid flashback. No, Donald Trump... Yes, exactly. Stupid. Warp 9. We've got to protect Thomas Edison. But it's not just Thomas Edison. And you know who he's going to have protect Thomas Edison? Frederick Douglass. More and more people are recognizing how good Frederick Douglass is at protecting people. And see, this is another one of those blissful, blessed little moments when the minds begin just running, you know, somewhere out. You know, a line can look parallel, but it's got just enough tweaking that somewhere out in the far, they'll touch. And lo and behold, it just happened with Steve in New York. Protect Thomas Edison? What's next? We have to protect Frederick Douglass? No, Frederick Douglass is going to protect Thomas Edison. Oh, God. Stupid. It hurts us. But here's the worst part. We're only halfway through the clip. Sure, he wants to protect Thomas Edison. Although Thomas Edison has been dead for decades. Maybe damn near a century. James in Illinois. Hey, maybe you've heard this one. Thomas Edison and Frederick Douglass walk into a bar. They each said, ow. Because the bar hurt when they walked in. It hurt when they walked into the bar. Oh, you know, if you do have the tequila, take a shot for me. Because, Let's get back so we I don't want to be accused of not of taking Julius Geezer out of context. Oh fuck no. Hang on tight. Cause Thomas Edison isn't the only one needs protecting.
Virginians, you know, we have to protect Thomas Edison, and we have to protect all of these people that came up with originally the light bulb and the wheel and all of these things. And he's one of our very smart people, and we want to cherish those people. That's very important. But he's done a very good job. Shocking.
We got to protect the guy who invented the wheel.
How it's come so fast. I mean, you go back a year, and they were talking about the end of the company, and now all of a sudden they're talking about these great things. He's going to be building a very big plant in the United States.
With the guy who invented the wheel. The wheel. I don't know why I didn't mention protecting the guy who discovered fire.
Yeah, but then again, that probably happened in Africa and, you know, one of those shithole countries.
And he says it all like he's so proud of himself.
I'm definitely going to protect the people who invented the wheel.
Fuck, that wasn't even Homo sapiens.
I never thought it was a homo. Homos don't invent things.
Mother McCree. Told you. Hockey puck. Now, here where I am in Northwest Alabama, they used to make some wheels. There was literally a buggy factory, a wagon factory here. And it was really going great guns right about the time that the internal combustion engine came along and it died. Florence Wagon Works. Yeah, but let's not leave all the limelight to Julius Geezer. Oh hell no. Precious Lindsay found him a camera to talk into today. He did. Yes. He had himself maybe a margarita and a Darvon. Crawled out from under the fainting couch down there at the family estate of Smoldering Chode. And Raul got out his best, found him his best interviewing suit. And Lindsay at the podium there, Plum had a conniption. Because them damn Democrats won't just give up on the impeachment trial and let him dismiss it and go and give the happy news to Tangerine Tiberius. Mercy sakes. Oh, yeah, Lindsay's in.
Pretty rough, tough things about Mueller. Remember the Nixon case? That's one of the things that got Nixon in trouble. He fired the prosecutor. So here's what I saw yesterday. I saw an effort to ask the Senate to ignore every privilege that President Clinton was able to exercise.
Yeah, except for the fact that President Clinton did not inform his entire administration to not cooperate with the investigation and, in fact, turned over some 90,000-plus documents.
But Lindsay didn't see that. Mercy sakes, no. Maybe he was busy on Grindr on his telephone. I don't know.
Nixon was able to exercise. And to suggest to the Senate that an independent judiciary really is a non-player. If I were the president, I wouldn't cooperate.
You know, that's the thing. Nobody actually said the independent judiciary was a non-player. What they said was that that Donald Trump should not be able to use the judiciary to delay and hide his crimes. But this is a concept that is entirely too difficult for the delicate sensibilities of precious Lindsay.
At all. I'm the same guy that said, you can't fire Mueller. I encouraged him to work with Mueller.
You know who else he is? He's the same guy who back in the late 90s, now mind you, said that ignoring subpoenas made you immediately impeachable. Not after going through the courts for 3 goddamn years, but immediately. That's what he said. He's that guy. Only he's not that guy, because that guy stopped being that guy when that guy started cashing them checks that came through the NRA that had all them rubles in them. And then one day he stopped being that guy. He stopped being that guy even more when he got a little note that said, by the way, just a little reminder. The Russians hacked the RNC server, too. And they disclosed everything that was on the DNC servers in hopes of embarrassing and destroying the political campaign of Hillary Clinton. They did that. But we, just to let you know, Comrade Lindsay, we hung on to the stuff we found on the RNC server. And Lindsay, we found some interesting things. Yes, we did. Just ask Raoul.
Mueller is a man of the law. Schiff, Nadler, and Pelosi impeached this president in 48 days. I wouldn't give them the time of day. They're on a crusade to destroy this man, and they don't care what they...
Oh, you mean that man who said would be the end of the Republican Party, and if y'all nominated him and ran him for president, would destroy the Republican Party, and that the Republican Party would deserve being destroyed? You mean that man, little old Lindsay? That one?
Destroy in the process of trying to destroy Donald Trump. I do care. So to my Democratic colleagues, you can say what you want about me, but I'm covering up nothing. I'm exposing your hatred of this president to the point that you would destroy the institution.
You know what? I just want to be clear about something here. Impeaching and removing from office a crooked president does not mean we don't get no more presidents. It doesn't even mean, as this the little neo-maxi zoom dweeby twerp has claimed, that it would invalidate the 2016 election. I mean, let's do remember that the 2016 election was invalid in the first place because the person who got the most votes didn't get to be the president now, did she? Because of the operation of an anachronism from our filthy slaveholding past that was put into the Constitution that is known as the Electoral College. That gave Southern planters who liked to own other people more political power than the population of their states would otherwise have allowed him to have. That's how the Electoral College works in conjunction with the little old three-fifths clause there in the Constitution, yes. But I guess Precious Lindsay done forgot that a good God-fearing man, a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual like Mike Pence, who's just praying Jesus right down out of the clouds that he'd become president.
Or does Precious Lindsay know a little bit more about the comings and goings and doings and carryings on of Mike Pencil Neck Geek than he'd like for us to know?
Nobody would be saying this about a Democratic president if a Republican House had done this. You wouldn't even ask me that question.
Lindsay, honey, y'all done spent months and months and millions and gajillions of dollars investigating her email server. And Benghazi, oh my God, Benghazi. And there wasn't any there, and every aspect of government has said, nope, no there on Benghazi. No, it's just that you didn't run out and say, hey, we didn't find anything. It was all bullshit, because it was real good for fundraising now, wasn't it? Of course it was.
All of you would be in our face saying that there's a Democratic president and you're denying that person, he or she, a chance to go to court and litigate these matters because you hate them so much. It shows
No, you pettifogging little bullshit artist. Nobody said he can't go to court. Motherfucker has gone to court upside down, backwards, forwards, and sideways. In court now. Waiting for it to... Yes, it can be. Steve in New York writing, Lindsay, this cannot be real. It is real. This is not a parody. This is not a joke. Yeah, I understand. Flavio says, all I got's Uzo. Bottoms up. Opa! I got water. God. And he goes on like this, utterly oblivious of his own past, his own history, recorded history. Jesus God.
People have become, when it comes to Trump, not one question about the idea that a Democratic-controlled House in 48 days impeached the President of the United States.
What is it about 48 days? Would he lie? No. Well, would it be better if it was 76 days? 92 and 7/8? 48 days. 48 days, mercy sakes. I can hardly... Somebody get me the smelling salts. I'm headed for the fainting couch. What a punk. What a pissant. What a shame upon the very idea of the Senate as conceived by the framers of the Constitution. 48 days. What is this? Is this some cheesy horror film where you pick up the phone and there's this gooey ass Southern accent on the end of it and go, 48 days. Has he got Alzheimer's? Does he not remember how he fulminated and steamed and pontificated over that there Bill Clinton a getting a blow job? 'Cause he did. Bill Clinton never got anybody killed. There's clear and compelling evidence that Donald Trump did in Ukraine. Indeed, Nagla in the Facebook group pointing out they keep trying to shift the focus away from the Cheeto in chief. Yeah, pound on the table, you know. Cece earlier said if he's not hiding anything, he needs to turn it over and let witnesses talk. Yeah, you know, Hey, Venerial Vespasian, get on that fancy-ass expensive airplane we give you. Fly your happy orange ass back home. Waddle over into the Senate and say, I demand to be heard. You know what? An innocent man would do that. No, I am not going to cue up Billy Joel singing An Innocent Man.
And it's like this everywhere you turn, with these weird little Republican lick spittles. And when he wasn't talking about protecting the inventor of the wheel, oh, there was this little morsel. You can file this under confessions. Representative Val Demings put this up on her Twitter account if you want to go and find it for later. But he confessed to the obstruction of Congress, and he did it in Switzerland. It's right here.
We're doing very well. I got to watch enough. I thought our team did a very good job. But honestly, we have all the material. They don't have the material. We're doing very well.
Got that?
I got to watch enough. I thought our team did a very good job. But honestly, we have all the material. They don't have the material.
Ta-da! We got all the material. They don't have the material. And, here's a little bit more nitwit Nero from Davos.
It's another century-long project continues to hold such a grip on our hearts and our souls that even 800 years after its construction, when the Cathedral of Notre Dame...
Yeah, he's talking about the burning, the fire at Notre Dame Cathedral. And do you recall... the very stable genius wanted tanker planes to drop water, tons and tons and tons of water. On Notre Dame and reduce it to rubble, make it explode. And again, he's dosed to the gills. He can barely open his mouth.
Was engulfed in flames last year. Such a sad sight to watch. Unbelievable sight, especially for those of us that considered it one of the great, great
those
monuments
of us.
And representing so many different things. The whole world grieved.
Wow, wait a minute. Time out. Comb over Caligula here says that Notre Dame Cathedral represented so many different things. Sometimes we like to engage in a little game of just seeing what's on folks' mind here. What different things did Notre Dame Cathedral represent to you? Because I know what it represented to me. It was a medieval Gothic cathedral of the Roman Catholic Church. Really didn't represent much other than that. I mean, you can take the larger framework of the human labor involved in creating the cathedral. And if you take away the great man theory of history, then Notre Dame Cathedral becomes a study in the power of community to get things done. But I know that Donald Trump doesn't give a fuck about working people. So he could never be bothered to wonder, you know, who were the stonemasons who carved all the little grotesques and things on the filials and coronials and hublubials. No. I mean, I guess we could say that it means well, what Notre Dame means to me is, you know, Charles Lawton swinging from that goddamn rope and sing to Eddie. That's twice this evening. But this is one of those moments when his extremely disordered, otherwise weak mind is engaged in trying to sound like he knows something, when in fact he's dumber than the head and a hog is in the ass.
and Notre Dame, which means so much, so many things.
It's a church.
Through her sanctuary now stands scorched and charred, and a sight that's hard to believe. When you got used to it, to look at it now, hard to believe.
What happened?
But we know that Notre Dame will be restored, magnificently.
Yeah, see, here's the problem. We don't know that. In fact, there are reports that say that Notre Dame may never be what it was once. It just won't. It may be, at least in part, a ruin. And it happens. It wouldn't be the first cathedral to fall into ruins. You can go about, 20 miles to the west-northwest along the Seine and find ruined castles from, 1198. One on an island in the Seine called Chateau Gaillard, built by Richard the Lionheart, said to be impregnable. And then, of course, John was such a fuck-up that Philip Augustus of France overran it in 1204, and it wasn't so impregnable anymore. Ruins happen. My God, though. Oh, wait a minute. Notre Dame represented. Stephen, New York. Cowbell on the way. Notre Dame represented Newt Rockne in the fight in Irish.
And win one for the Gipper. Yes, Mommy. Ketchup is a vegetable.
As to Precious Lindsay, Stephen, New York says the irony is so thick light can't pass through it. It's a neutron star of irony. Ron and Raleigh, subject line Notre Dame. The cathedral represents to me the invention of new construction techniques that had never been seen before. He wanted to drop water because he doesn't believe water weighs anything. We're playing real fast and loose with my sobriety right now. Steve adds, Notre Dame Cathedral, I'm sure it represented the two Corinthians somewhere in it. Notre Dame, where James in Illinois, where's the forest that we're going to sacrifice in order to restore it? Maybe we could, like, use some of those new space-age construction techniques that Thomas Edison's been working on. See how I looped back around on that one? Don't try this at home, kids. I have an idea, says Lady B. Liberal media, offer Trump $1 billion to testify and declare his innocence. Don't do immunity unless you got state charges to back it up. Offer him the best talent in the legal world to make good guest appearances. Have Scarlett Johansson play Ivanka. Appeal to his ego. He'll talk like a 16-year-old girl caught reading her sister's diary. Oh, what an image. What an image. That's fantastic. Like a 16-year-old girl caught reading her sister's diary. Yeah, you got appeal to his ego. Works every time. So, somehow or another, we've gotten through almost an hour and 15 minutes of the program. Still got a $415 fundraising goal, $415 to catch up with this evening and yesterday, and $15 worth of Monday. It would be great if we could get to work on that. So anybody who wants to jump in alongside new contributor Robin is more than welcome so to do. So, what's that, Steve in New York? Oh, dear, dear Bob, the water he wanted to drop was not as wet as normal water. It's a little worrisome sometimes, the degree to which you all can anticipate his ignorance. It might even be dangerous. Oh, I know. Tony in the Facebook group says, if only they'd had rakes at Notre Dame. Oh, yeah. And you know what? I'm going to miss doing this Facebook thing when I go home. Because this all goes away as of next Monday's program. The fabulous Horn Studios may be fabulous, but they're also tiny. And there's just no way to set up and do what I do, what I've been doing here. And that's going to be a shame. Because I kind of get I get a kick out of having extra places to interact with you guys. Bernadette over in the chat room, 48 days. 48 days, the movie. Yes. Don't answer the phone. Well, let's go back to the proceedings and see what's happening over there.
Words of the president.
Ah, this is Hakeem Jeffries
of the United States of America. Ambassador Yovanovitch did not know of President Trump's disparaging remarks at the time. She didn't learn of them until the call record became public in September. Asked whether she felt threatened by President Trump's statement that she was going to go through some things, Ambassador Yovanovitch answered that she did. Here is what she said.
The next excerpt, when the president references you, was a short one. But he said, well, she's going to go through some things. What did you think when President Trump told President Zelensky and you read that you were going to go through some things?
I didn't know what to think, but I was very concerned.
What were you concerned about?
She's going to go through some things. It didn't sound good. It sounded like a threat.
Did you feel threatened?
I did.
During that same call, President Trump also took the opportunity to praise Yuri Lutsenko. Mr. Lutsenko is the former Ukrainian prosecutor general who was widely regarded by the entire free world, including our European allies and the International Monetary Fund, to be corrupt and incompetent. But Donald John Trump, our president, praised him on that call. He told President Zelensky, quote, I heard you had a prosecutor who was very good, and he was shut down, and that's really unfair. A lot of people are talking about that, the way they shut your very good prosecutor down, and you had some very bad people involved. Think about this contrast. The president bashed a career American diplomat, an anti-corruption champion, who he unceremoniously removed because she was viewed as an obstacle to his efforts to solicit foreign interference in the 2020 election, and at the same time praised someone who he thought could be an asset corrupt Ukrainian prosecutor who the free world viewed as an obstacle to the rule of law. The idea that President Trump cares about corruption is laughable. It's laughable. Plain reading of the rough transcript of the July 25th call also sheds light on the quid pro quo involving the Oval Office meeting that had been sought. President Zelensky said on the call, "I also wanted to thank you for your invitation to visit the United States, specifically Washington, D.C. On the other hand, I also wanted to ensure that we will be very serious about the case and will work on the investigation. As all of you know, here in this distinguished body, quid pro quo is a Latin term. It means this for that. The statement that I just read shows that President Zelensky fully understood at the time of this July 25th call that if he yielded to President Trump's demand for phony investigations, he would get the White House meeting in the Oval Office that he desperately sought. This for that. President Trump has repeatedly insisted that his July 25th conversation with President Zelensky was a perfect call. His staff at the White House apparently believed otherwise. The press office issued a short and incomplete summary of the July 25th call. Let me read it for your hearing. Today,
incomplete summary. That's the thing that he's been referring to. Nitwit Nero has is read the transcript, and he's got all the maggots running around. He's sold them T-shirts that say read the transcript. It's not a transcript. Oh, Draymond.
Sergeant in arms will restore order in the gallery.
Ooh, John Roberts woke up. That's old balls and strikes for you.
And the scripture says, for the Lord loves justice and will not abandon his faithful ones. Official
Ooh.
White House call readout.
Hakeem Jeffries 5th, doing the prayer meeting Wednesday work for us.
Today, President Donald J. Trump spoke by telephone with President Vladimir Zelensky of Ukraine to congratulate him on his recent election. President Trump and President Zelensky discussed ways to strengthen the relationship.
Oh, hold on a minute. He's reading the summary. But that was a fascinating little moment, wasn't it? That was some maggot in the gallery shrieking about how Jesus wants Donald Trump to be in something about God. And Hakeem Jeffries was ready. He had a Bible verse memorized to come back at that maggot goober with. These people are prepared. They've got it all. They can't be shaken. They cannot be they cannot be pulled aside from the desperate constitutional task they have at hand before them. That, I don't know if the four multimillionaires and the for-profit media will cover that, but damn. Wow. And did you hear? The maggot goober started screaming, was quickly hauled out, and you could still hear, or at least I could in my cans here, you could still hear him when the maggot was way outside the Senate gallery, and he was still shrieking at the top of his lungs. They're going to be at a fever pitch. And again, I return to my thesis of yesterday.
And what and part of the reason for that mob action in Richmond on Monday? The maggots are trying to make sure that the Republicans understand that they dare not speak up. They dare not honor their oaths to the Constitution of the United States, because when they get back home or when they're out in public, the maggots are at a boiling point and they are ready to kill. And before they'll take a pot shot at one of the opposition, the Republicans know that the maggots are far more dangerous to them. They have sown the wind, and the Republicans are now reaping the whirlwind. They must let the Constitution die in order to save their own miserable skins from the monsters that they turned loose for nothing more than the shitty ambition of holding onto their shitty seats. That is where we are. And in point of fact, that was the clip we had from Precious Lindsay earlier. Let's go back to that for a minute, because you have to understand why he got into such high dudgeon, oh my God, and went and hollered at a camera over it, because he was deeply, deeply, terribly offended, and Raul could hardly console him. When late last night, early this morning, Jerry Nadler told Republicans in the Congress who had repeatedly voted 53 to 47, no, we don't want the facts. No, we don't want the truth. No, we don't want the documents. No, we don't want to subpoena anybody. We don't want to do anything but stick our tongues up that brown and smelly place on Donald Trump, our God Emperor. And Jerry Nadler made him look in the mirror and recognize exactly what they were doing. And so consequently, you've got Precious Lindsay out there getting all flustermicated. Yeah, what's that, Lindsay? We can't hardly hear you for your hypocrisy, honey. Oh, no.
Some pretty rough, tough things about Mueller. Remember the Nixon case? That's one of the things that got Nixon in trouble. He fired the prosecutor.
Try again.
Donald Trump, I do care. So to my Democratic colleagues, you can say what you want about me, but I'm covering up nothing. I'm exposing your hatred of this president to the point that you would destroy the institution. Nobody would be saying this about a Democratic president.
He's exposing... Dot, dot, dot. Thank you, Goddess of Irony. I was going to reach down for his fly for a minute. Your hatred for this president... Jesus. So that was the cause of his conniption, and noted moderate U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski, who had to be elected as an independent because she couldn't win the Republican nomination in her own state of Alaska. Well, she said she was offended. Katie Edmondson on Twitter from the New York Times said, Lisa Murkowski told reporters today she was offended by Nadler's remarks. And apparently the Republicans did not like having reality intrude on their little cover-up. Oh, no. Oh, no. And so Josh Hawley out in Missouri, he's offended too. And Pity Pat Cipollone wanted an apology
Or what? Pistols at fucking dawn, you shit weasel. And Ron Johnson from Wisconsin. My name is Ron Johnson. I come from Wisconsin. I work in the lumber mills there. When I walk down the street, all the people I meet, they say, hey, what's your name? And I say, my name is Ron Johnson. I work in Wisconsin. I work in the lumber mills there. Yeah, Ron Johnson, who got his ass handed to him by Hillary Clinton. Remember him? He said, if the Democrats are smart, they won't put Jerry Nadler on the field again. He was so out of line, it's offensive accusing us of a cover-up. Then stop covering up, Ron. Damn. And then grin. I'm covering up nothing. Well, I think nothing's a bit of a broad term in the larger scope of your career there, Lindsay. But, you know, who the hell am I? Steve in New York, in honor of prayer meeting Wednesday, the GOP sold the Constitution to Trump in exchange for 30 pieces of silver so he could crucify it. Ooh. Darlene in Connecticut, again, what do the Russians have on Lindsey Graham? What's he exposing? He's full of shit. And compromised as hell. Remember, every Republican who has NRA money in their coffers has rubles in their coffers. Those rubles are compromised. Every Republican who showed up at the National Prayer Breakfast is Russian compromised because the Russians compromised that event. It's just how it is. Oh, and hey, we got off the schneid. That's awesome. Thank you. Thank you to Gary. We are now down from 415 to 390. 390 bucks to go to catch up with where we need to be on this 22nd day of the month. But 390 is a heck of a lot better than 440. But I'm sure Robin and Gary would love to have some company if folks would love to jump on board. And all right. By the way, like I said, this is Conversation Radio, so if you'd like to participate, you are more than welcome to do so. The stress line's open, 844-843-4676. And, of course, over on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, or 304-574-8178. It all gets you into the program. And I'm sorry if I'm sorry for being such a cynic about this entire process, but I don't believe in unicorns, fairies, hobbits, leprechauns, or moderate Republicans. They are all the tooth fairy. They are all great pumpkin, all figments of the imagination, or in the case of the moderate Republicans, figments of the imagination of the multimillionaire for-profit media. They just kind of are. All right, where are... let's check back in with Congressman Jeffries.
He refreshed his re-election about the July 26th call, which Ambassador Sondland had not originally described when he first appeared at a deposition before the House.
Also, on July 26th, shortly after our Kiev meetings, I spoke by phone with President Trump. The White House, which has finally shared certain call dates and times with my attorneys, confirms this. The call lasted 5 minutes. I remember I was at a restaurant in Kiev, and I have no reason to doubt that this conversation included the subject of investigations. Again, given Mr. Giuliani's demand that President Zelensky make a public statement about investigations, I knew that investigations were important to President Trump.
President Trump said that his July 25th conversation was a perfect call. It was far from perfect. In a perfect call, the president would not demand a political favor from a vulnerable Ukraine under attack by a Russian foe. In a perfect call, the president would not demand that a foreign leader investigate a Russian-inspired conspiracy about the 2016 election. In a perfect call, the president would not pressure a foreign government to target an American citizen for political personal gain. In a perfect call, the president would not solicit foreign interference in the 2020 election. In a perfect call, the president would not threaten the well-being of a highly respected American ambassador and say that she was going to go through some things. In a perfect call, the president would not praise a disgraced former prosecutor who the free world viewed as corrupt and incompetent. And in a perfect call, the president would not have directed a foreign leader to follow up with Rudolph Giuliani, a human hand grenade. This was not a perfect call. It is direct evidence that President Donald John Trump corruptly abused his power and solicited foreign interference in the 2020 election.
The majority leader is recognized.
Mr. Chief Justice, colleagues, we'll now take a 30-minute break for dinner and reconvene at 7:05. So I ask consent the Senate stand in recess until that time.
Without objection, so ordered.
Now, about taking those breaks. Jason Crow of Colorado had their number earlier because he noticed that Republicans were getting up and wandering around, and old Balls and Strikes wasn't doing a damn thing about it. Because, see, they are actually operating under rules there. Senate rules. Senate rules promulgated by Moscow Mitch himself. And the rule itself says that the senators will sit down and listen. And Jason Crow had to wake up old Balls and Strikes Roberts and say, you know what? The Republicans aren't sitting down and listening. And Jason Crow woke up old Balls and Strikes Roberts to make him pay attention and enforce the damn rule. And of course, the fact that old Balls and Strikes last night admonished both sides when only one side was engaging in unmitigated shittiness, and that would be Pat Cipo, you know, pity Pat Cipollone, having a shit hemorrhage when he got called out. Hey, apparently Rick Scott's not going to dinner. He's probably already had it because he's been wandering around the whole goddamn time instead of being a good juror and pay attention. Let's see what kind of bullshit he's got.
We're going to have a fair process. I mean, they tried to change the process, the House Democrats did yesterday, but we're going to go do what we did with Clinton. We're going to listen to both sides.
That's not true.
We're going to ask her questions, and we'll make a decision if there's going to be...
Who are you going to ask questions of? There's not going to be any goddamn witnesses.
They had the opportunity to ask to subpoena Bolton. They didn't do it. I mean, they...
And Bolton didn't show up.
Think what they did.
He said he wouldn't show up.
They said there was an imminent threat. And then what they do, and what they did after that is they set off for 33 days, and then last night all they did was try to slow down the process again because they don't have a plan or they don't have a case, whatever.
The president this morning was talking about how he has all these documents.
Now remember, this is Rick Skeletor Scott from Florida, and this dickhead took an oath. To judge the case impartially, and he's out there giving Republican talking points. Tell me, when's the last time you turned on court TV or anybody else carrying a trial and saw reporters asking jurors during the break how they thought the case was going? These fuckers have no intention whatsoever of honoring their oath. Because the only thing that matters to them, well, it's not their oath. It's their payday. And it's making sure that they keep everybody happy who has all the filth on them so that it won't come out. Whether it's rent boys or Russian rubles or... Well, you know the old saying, live boy or dead girl. Over in the Facebook chat room, Tony says, I'd give those ghost adventure boys $1,000 to conjure up John McCain to come back and kick Lindsey's closeted ass. I think that's worth a cowbell. Yeah, that's exactly what it was. Tony pointing out old balls and strikes doing the both-siderism dance. Look, anybody, I've got a bridge in Brooklyn to sell to anybody who thinks that John Roberts is going to be some sort of an impartial umpire. That fucker is the most evil Republican and brilliant. Evil and brilliant Republican in the United States. He proved it in 2012 when he said that, well, you know, we can't let the Affordable Care Act stand as an exercise of Commerce Clause power, but we can let it stand under Congress's ability to tax. But hey, all you working poors out there, the government doesn't have the power to make the state you live in provide Medicaid to you. Wow. I mean, that's Mount Doom level evil. All you people who live in the Confederacy, no, you can't have health care, but if you live in a state with some decent human beings running the government, you're good. In other words, the accident of birth will drive whether you live or die. It takes a special kind of evil to turn that into law. Oh, here comes the only African-American Republican in the Senate, Tim Scott of South Carolina, accompanied by some white dude in glasses.
Seems to me is this was an effort by the Democrats in a very partisan way.
That's John Barrasso from Wyoming.
Happy with the results of the 2016 election and are concerned that they're going to have real problems in the 2020 election when we look at the candidates running for president again.
You know, shitbird, we are going to have problems in the 2020 election because you fuckers don't care whether Russia messes in it or not. And you're ignoring the fact that they are, and you're turning a blind eye to the fact that they did.
This is not just about the impeachment of the president. This is a focus on an attempt by the Democrats to take the Senate, which is what Senator Schumer essentially admitted in an interview with the New York Times.
Yeah, there's no question that when you think about this entire process, if yesterday they were going to present today overwhelming evidence, what we've seen is just a rehashing of yesterday's charade. Therefore, the conclusion is a very simple one, that the goal of this entire process is not to remove the president from office. It's simply to remove certain Republican senators, Colorado, North Carolina, Iowa, Maine, and Arizona from office. And this is absolutely an opportunity for them to try to overtake the Senate.
Senator, if you're concerned about not hearing anything new, why not agree to a subpoena for John Bolton or Mick Mulvaney, who could provide new information?
Well, I think the House still reserves the right to compel testimony, and they did not do it then. And if there are entire conversations around the fact that it'll take too long, they could have saved us a couple of months had they already done so. So I welcome a Speaker Pelosi to compel Bolton or anyone else to come into the House and testify, and they've suggested that they may decide to continue the process anyways.
And if you read the brief, that the House managers brought forward, 11 times it says the information is overwhelming. The facts are overwhelming. Nadler has said we could do this in 3 minutes, that it's a rock solid case. Present the case. Let us vote. It doesn't seem, if the vote is on the impeachment of the President of the United States and the evidence is overwhelming, present it and ask us to vote. We ought to be able to make that decision. Right now, we're going to hear from the managers. They're about 5.5, 6 hours into a 24-hour presentation. We'll then hear from the White House in their defense whether they know which way they're going to vote and aren't going to need any additional information. Anything else seems to be that some senators, already knowing how they're planning to vote, are just looking for additional information, not to inform themselves, but for political purposes.
You don't think documents, for instance, a subpoena to get documents, could inform your judgment as you cast this vote?
I look forward to having the entire case laid out by both sides. This is the first time we'll have an opportunity to hear the president's rebuttal of what they say are the facts from the House manager's perspective. So as we go through the process, it will provide us 16 hours after both sides have laid out their case. We'll then have a chance to ask the questions that we find pertinent to the investigation. And then at that point, we'll have an opportunity to engage our colleagues on what they want to do next.
What questions, if any, do you have?
Well, I think it's really important for us to first focus on the fact that what we've seen so far is a reflection on the past, not a foreshadowing of the future. So when we listen to our House managers lay out their case, they continue to talk about what we think is, in fact, true, that the corruption in the Ukraine is clear. So for the focus on 2016's election is exactly what we've heard. We've not heard any actual evidence about 2020.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. And Republican Senators Scott and Barrasso are in the basement of the Capitol.
Yeah. Well, that was a little embarrassing. You reckon it was intentional? That they hauled out Mike Barrasso with the Republican Party's token African-American senator. It's the only one they got. To sit there and talk about how, and it's just a lie. That's the thing, it's just a lie. Well, John Bolton, if they would have issued him a subpoena, he would have come right over. He said straight up, Bolton did, if you subpoena me, I'm off to court. Which meant that they weren't going to hear from him. As the House managers have pointed out, we're still waiting, the House is still waiting to hear from Don McGahn, and they subpoenaed him in May. Maybe March. It's one of those months that begins with M. I mean, for pity's sakes. And this, in turn, leads to people losing faith. Oh, no, wait, never mind. Here comes Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America. And one of the funny how they can't find any Democrats to talk to.
is just a few hours into their opening arguments, they're already repeating the same points they made for 13 hours yesterday. And I suspect the Democrats threw a fit yesterday, insisted they needed at least 3 full days to present the arguments. I think we're going to see an awful lot of repetition making the same points over and over
again. That's because you're so fucking stupid you have to have things reinforced to you, Raffaellito.
Number one, several of the Democratic managers made the case that Ukraine, denying Ukraine military aid, endangered lives, was a tremendous blow to American national security.
Oh, here it comes. Obama did it.
The moment of delaying military aid to Ukraine risked lives. There's an old saying that hypocrisy is the tribute vice pays to virtue. And this is a really powerful example, because if there is such a compelling national security interest to give military aid to Ukraine, then what do these House Democrats have to say about the years that Barack Obama refused to give lethal military aid to Ukraine?
Black guy's fault.
In fact, I traveled to Ukraine in 2014, came back and urged Barack Obama to give lethal military aid to Ukraine. The Obama administration refused to do so. Instead, they sent blankets and MREs, but they wouldn't give lethal aid. On the other hand, the Trump administration has given Javelin missiles, has sold Javelin missiles that can take out...
No, liar. The Congress did that, and the Trump administration withheld them.
I guess the consequence is, under their argument, maybe they should have impeached Obama if not giving military aid to Ukraine was a deep threat to U.S. national security. A second point. I think the House managers made a very serious strategic error today. Adam Schiff's arguments to open the day today directly drew into question.
Well, remember, you have to take Raffaellito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, seriously. Because after all, when he was at Harvard, he was a master debater. Yes.
Was a sham, that it was completely debunked. The problem is, there is very significant prima facie evidence of corruption. Hunter Biden, the son of the then sitting president, Joe Biden, was being paid $83,000 a month, $1 million a year. This is someone with no background in oil and gas, no experience. And at the same time, Joe Biden has publicly admitted that he threatened Ukraine, he withheld or threatened...
Jesus, the talking points. Raffaellito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, must have been on one of those breaks when the Republicans were wandering around when it was explained that in insisting upon the firing of the corrupt prosecutor, that Joe Biden was doing the bidding not only of his boss, the President of the United States, but of the of generally the world community, and particularly the European security community. But see, this is Prayer Meeting Wednesday, after all. We need to understand something. Raffaellito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, is an evangelical Christian. That means he's a liar by definition. That means you can assume anything he says is a lie, because evangelical Christians lie. It is their default position to lie, because evangelical Christians. And you'd think it's like he wants to. This is so weird watching him do this, because he's with his beady little Cubanadian eyes, he's eyeballing the camera, looking right into it and gesturing as if he's talking right to the folks at home.
Not about Ukrainian corruption, but a question about American corruption, and Ukraine being integral in helping investigate whether there was, in fact, American corruption. I think we're going to hear another 2.5 days of arguments from the House Democrats, but the longer they talk at this
and
point...
And none of the geniuses of the for-profit media even interrupt him.
The decision on calling witnesses is a decision in the first instance for the parties and for the party's counsels. And so the question on calling Hunter Biden is going to be a decision for President Trump's lawyers to make initially if they ask to call Hunter Biden. If they ask to call Hunter Biden, if they ask to call the whistleblower, if they ask to call other potentially relevant witnesses, then the Senate will have to make a decision whether to grant that request. I don't think the Senate should force the parties to call witnesses that they don't.
Now, wouldn't that be hilarious? The Republicans call the Republicans decide or the maggots over there at the bad lawyer table decide to call Hunter Biden and the whistleblower, whomever that may be. And then say to the Democrats, no, sorry, no John Bolton. None of the other witnesses we haven't heard from. No Mick Mulvaney. Nobody that can hurt the president, but will engage in a paranoid fantasy. Wouldn't surprise me a bit. Oh, and by the way, when Hakeem Jeffries was speaking and the maggot goobers started shrieking, well, we now know who, or we kind of know what was going on. Some good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, busted into the Senate gallery and started yelling, "Jesus Christ would!" And then they pulled him out. Here's the thing. Because of the un-American rules about reporters not being able to report using electronic devices inside the Senate chambers, no one was able to get a photograph of the guy. No one was able to witness his maggot outburst. And in fact, if he had burst in and thrown a knife, no reporter would have been able to take a picture of it. If he had burst in and somehow managed to begin to spray the Senate with bullets, not a single reporter would have been able to do their constitutionally mandated function as a member of the Fourth Estate and report on what happened with photographs or any kind of electronic recording. Among other things, of course, the goober was yelling, "Schumer is the devil!" And they support abortion! Because, of course, the precious little fetuses had to find their way into this somehow. Jesus. The audio wasn't so great when we heard it live. Let's see if it makes a little more sense in recorded format. Because the only thing that was picked up was there were no images of the follower of Christ. Just the recording of the camera that was pointed at Hakeem Jeffries. So if it had been some hell-bent assassin maggot, we would have only seen the end result, not the person doing the dirty work. Let's see if this is a little clearer now.
The press office issued a short and incomplete summary of the July 25th call. Let me read it for your hearing. Today, President Donald J. Trump spoke by telephone with President Vladimir Zelensky of Ukraine to congratulate him on his recent
Jesus Christ, Republic, overturn the Senate will be in order. The sergeant in arms will restore order in the gallery.
That's it. If it had been anything other than just a shouting maggot, if it had been something that had tragic bearing on the future of the Republic because of the rules that Moscow Mitch McConnell put in place, no one would ever have been able to see it. Critical evidence that might be necessary for the prosecution, not available, thanks to the rules that Moscow Mitch put in place, because Moscow Mitch wants this done as nearly in secret as he possibly can. we'd be getting a lot more information out of this hearing if it was actually open and above board instead of a faked up, frauded up, rubed up, dummied up, ginned up con. As Moscow Mitch has envisioned it being. Man, this is some prayer meeting Wednesday, isn't it? Darlene in Connecticut. I hate to say it, Bob, but I think Cruz looks better with the beard. At least it covers some of his face. Well, there's that, and it's and you know, if he and Mel Gibson ever show up at a party together, they can go as twins, or like, you know, twin Satans or something, because they've got the same damn creepy looking, demonic looking beard. And as Darlene pointed out, since when do Republicans ever respond to Democrats throwing a hissy fit? So that's why Lord McConnell allowed more time for arguments. There we go. Ooh. Steve noting Hunter Biden, if that's the quid pro quo to get witnesses, have at it. Let's do it. Now, see, the game they'll play is that, you know, they'll if Nitwit Nero demands witnesses, they will, the Republicans in the Senate will let him have the witnesses he wants, but will still continue to make sure that the Democrats, the House managers, do not get the witnesses necessary to prove the case. And understand that there are layers here. The first set of rules that Moscow Mitch put out were not the rules he expected to run by, because the fact of the matter is he knew there'd be a hissy about him. And he also knew that the incredibly gullible multimillionaire for-profit media would say, oh, Moscow Mitch is, he might be losing control of his caucus, when nothing could be further from the truth. Moscow Mitch is playing chess. Chuck Schumer is playing three-card Monte that's being dealt by Moscow Mitch's nearest and dearest. It's just worth bearing in mind. Memo to Ted Cruz, courtesy of Scott in San Diego. When it comes to tremendous blows, I nominate your lying lips around that the chief executive's tangerine-hued, tiny, limp little Trump for the blown blue ribbon. What an evening. What a time to be alive. Oh, my God, it's Jay Suckyanow.
How would I handle it? It would not be a decision I would make individually as the president's private counsel. The White House counsel obviously would be the primary there.
And here's the fun part. The Republicans can allow Bolton to be called, and then the minute that happens, Nitwit Nero will say, executive privilege, I won't let him testify, it has to go through the courts. And then, boom, 6 months, 9 months, a year.
Decisions on executive privilege didn't exist. They do exist. We will apply them when appropriate. We'll determine that as the proceedings move forward. I got time. One more, last one.
Senator Cruz was just here saying that Hunter Biden's testimony is critical and directly relevant. Do you agree with that?
I'm not going to. I have tremendous respect for Senator Cruz. I am not going to comment on what testimony may or may not be relevant. I'll take one more.
After the Chief Justice admonished both sides yesterday, is that going to change how you approach your defense?
I have known John Roberts for a long time. I have appeared before John Roberts. I have been co-counsel with John Roberts. There was some emotion on the floor yesterday, but when they accused my...
In other words, the fix is in.
When they accused the United States Senate of lying, when they've accused my colleagues of lying, and then the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee says the words executive privilege and other nonsense, it's going to evoke a reaction. That's all I'll say. Thank you, everybody.
Well, they've done a good job of getting responses from Republicans. I've been monitoring this the whole time, and precious few, if any, are the Democrats who have been heard from. Wonder why that is. Steve in New York asks, what am I feeling? I'm asking this to see what the other Horn family members are feeling. I'd love to hear from the rest of the community. Anger? Exasperation? Sadness? Desperation? Helplessness? Defeat? Powerlessness? Share your feelings. And, you know, we've got about 55 minutes left in the program, and you're welcome to call in with them. I'd welcome your thoughts. Either by Skype or by the stress line. Stress line 844-843-4676. What am I feeling? Yeah, I'm angry. I'm extremely angry. Because there are 57 members of the United States Senate who love their own hides, love their own wealth, love their own access to power, love their own elected offices, and most of all, appear to love an orange misanthrope with a disordered mind more than they love our country. Maybe it wouldn't be so bothersome if I hadn't had to listen to Republicans for most of all of my adult life hollering about how goddamn Democrats, they won't pass a flag burning amendment. We need a Constitution amendment against burning the flag because we love America. Or starting a war that got thousands and thousands of American service personnel killed, not to mention a million Iraqi civilians, and however God knows how many Afghan wedding parties we've hellfire missiled. Yeah, we're doing it because we love America. But they don't love America enough to put the Constitution first. And how pathetic that is. Yeah. I wonder how dinner's going. Well, let's check in with Scott and see, I have a feeling maybe Scott's answering Steve's question. Well, let's go on, Scott.
Yeah, I'll try to. Because I have to do that reality check with myself in recent days, well, hell, since Election Day 2016 and thereafter, but more in recent days, watching these proceedings unfold. And I'm feeling sad, but for two reasons. One reason is I read first thing in the morning, the passing of Terry Jones, Monty Python alum.
Yeah, it made me sad.
Age 77. So that kind of hacked me off. But then as I'm watching the proceedings, I'm perusing the latest update on the New York Times website, and there's an obituary for Tom Railsback. And you've got to be of a certain age to know who he was. He was a Republican House member from Illinois who was on the House Judiciary Committee in 1974 during the proceedings for the possible impeachment of President Nixon at the time. He had been in the House since 1966. He was a friend of Nixon's, admired Nixon for whatever good the man did, but also was realistic and grounded and educated in the true ways of the country and our system of government to do the right thing, to step out of the comfort zone of duty to party or loyalty to party or love of position or, you know, any possible flack that he might get from his constituents or Republicans at large. And he was able to take all of that into consideration and still do the right thing. And it wasn't so many years ago, really, in the grand scheme of things, that we had.
Well, it feels like there's no small amount of our irony in the, in his passing in the midst of this.
Well, yeah, I was getting to that, you know, and it's like he was 87, so he was an elderly guy, and people warned him at the time. See, this is the insidious nature of today's Republican Party and the unlimited spending and all of that happy crap. People warned him not to vote for impeachment, because, like I said, he was sitting on the House Judiciary Committee. Nixon's future and the country's future were on the line here, yet he did the right thing. And people warned him in advance of that, you know, your constituents will rebel, blah, 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 blah. You'll never have lunch in this town again. Everything along those lines, threats, warnings, scare tactics. Yet he was reelected for four more terms, you know? Whereas,
on the other hand, in the 1974 elections, I just happened to run across this earlier today, Scott. You might find it interesting.
Okay.
So a guy like Railsback is, you know, I like that line. You'll never have lunch in this town again.
I mean, that's a threat.
In the 1974
the midterms.
Republicans lost 49 seats in the House.
Yeah.
And eight in the Senate of the United States.
And what happened 2 years ago in the House races in 2018? How many seats was that? 40? I think it equaled or seconded the number that the Democrats gained in 74. And you've got to remember the context and the times, because I remember it very well. The November midterms in 74 were less than 3 months after, what are we, August 9th, September 9th, October 9th? Yeah, roughly 3 months from, 2 or 3 months from the date Nixon resigned. A lot of people were too fucking slow to get off the Love Nixon train. They had opportunities to jump off, but a lot of them wanted to wait and see. You know, this wait and see will bite us in the ass every time, you know? And as a result, a lot of those folks had to go out and get real jobs, you know? And it all, you know, getting back to the roots of our current problem, it all began to go wrong with the rise of Leroy Newt Gingrich and that insidious fuck, and the havoc that he the havoc that he inflicted upon our United States House of Representatives. He pulled out all the fucking stops, is what he did, and he made it be, rather than adversaries or learned opponents or, you know, people across the aisle, the Democrats became the enemy. And inflicted upon them were all of the horrible things that irresponsible people do to enemies, political or otherwise.
Well, Kyle in Kentucky, Stan, just wrote and said, a Republican who stood for the rule of law and constitutional separation of power dies in the midst of the Republicans killing both. The goddess of irony never sleeps.
Yeah. But anyway, I sent you Railsback's obit, and you don't have to read the whole thing, but mention a few of the highlights for the younger people or the people my age who don't remember, because it's not outside of the realm of possibility that we can recapture some of our American greatness. And I know people kind of snicker at that notion, but this is the majority of people in this country are good, decent people when it comes right down to it, at least in the important ways where it counts. And we have got to get our heads around that and our hearts and our spirits and our backs into it to bring about as much of that as we can in the coming months with the election looming in 2020, this November, because it's just that the stakes are so incredibly high that our fucking future could depend on what we do or don't do come November. So when I watch, you know, the Senate portion of these proceedings, it makes my head hurt, and it makes my heart hurt, and it makes my butt hurt to actually remember a time when we behaved responsibly and appropriately, and here we are, not too many years later.
Yeah, Jimmy in the Great Northwest said the reason they don't put the Constitution first is because they don't love America. It's like you said, they're in love with their money and their seats, which they should get off of and do the right thing. The age of Republicans who do the right thing is gone. It's over. It's done. And James in Illinois reminding us, if not for gerrymandering, 2018 would have been the greatest turnover in herstory.
Yeah. But we
need a giggle somewhere along the way. So let's check in with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo.
Oh God.
you want to say it? You want to say it or shall I? The tagline.
We're all screwed.
No. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo.
Oh, first in his class.
Graduated first in his class at West Point. Yes.
Yeah.
It never stops being funny. So he declared today. The protests. Wait. Just. I have to compose myself for this. The protests.
West Point was putting out wheat blight crop that year.
He declared, and this is, you know, there's tremendous unrest in Lebanon right now. Because the government is in a complete state of collapse. And the people are being left to hang fire. And so Mike Pompeo has declared, and remember, this is Lebanon, not Lebanon, Pennsylvania.
Or Lebanon, Missouri.
Or Lebanon, Missouri, or Lebanon, Tennessee. This is Lebanon, Lebanon.
Yeah.
This is a quote. Might want to get the hockey puck. The protests taking place today in Lebanon are saying to Hezbollah, Hizballah, I don't think it's the protests taking place today in Lebanon are saying to Hezbollah, no mas, no more. Yes. The Secretary of State of the United States, who graduated first in his class at West Point, thinks the national language of Lebanon is Spanish. You know,
it's too bad Danny Thomas is dead. You know, he was from Lebanon, or his people were.
No, but I mean, this makes me want to hop up on the table and, you know, just.
Well, you got to remember, where we imported Pompeo from. Wasn't he a congressman from Kansas?
Oh, yeah, he was an evangelical fundamentalist congressman who thought that Barack Obama was a Kenyan Muslim usurper in our White House.
There you go.
No mas. In Lebanon.
Can you sense the exasperation, Bob, on my part? And maybe I'm a fool for thinking that things can turn around, but the Republicans, I think, and we've already seen an indication of it in the 2018 results in the House races. The Republicans are getting very close to the abyss. Where the Democrats were in like 94, I guess it was, when Newt Gingrich and his crew hijacked the party and the House. You know, how long have they been, by and large, running things on the House side, more often than not, I mean, because we've had brief forays back into reality. But for the most part, since 1994,
yeah,
they've held.
Well, it was the 94 election, so let's say since January 95.
Yeah. You know, and we do regain some measure of consciousness and sanity. But then the big money comes in the next time around. And like in 2010, I think was an example of they panicked and said, well, we can't have fucking Democrats giving us fucking health care. Now, can we?
Commies. Yeah.
Yeah. Even though it wasn't the right-wing think tank that came up with the idea that Obamacare Affordable Care Act was based on, which it wasn't the Cato Institute. It was that other big
Heritage.
One. Heritage. Yeah. Yeah.
And it was first tried out as Romney Care in Massachusetts.
Yeah. Bingo.
And then Bishop Willard had to run away from it because it was so popular and was actually kind of halfway working. But a question coming in from Ron in Raleigh, come to think of it, where in the hell is Newton Leroy? You know, Newton Leroy Gingrich, the amateur paleontologist.
He pops up from time to time.
Ron says you'd think he'd be somewhere flapping his gums about miscarriage of justice and some other bullshit. I don't mean to conjure his ass or anything, but no. No, he's over in Rome with his third wife, Callista, who is the ambassador to the See of St. Peter. And I have a feeling they're both wearing gimp suits down in some basement of the Vatican being whipped with barbed wire and loving every minute of it.
In the back of a Vatican City pawn shop or in the basement.
You know, whack! Mea culpa, mea culpa, mea maxima culpa. Whack! Whack! Thank you. Thank you, Holy Father. May I have another? Whack!
Where? With those royal blue Mother Mary ball gags in their mouths down in the old Vatican basement. Jesus.
Yep. And the Donald Trump butt plugs. Yes.
Oh. God, you made me my skin all over my body.
Dude, it's not doing me any good either.
It's halfway out the door, damn it. That's how it's. But what I'm saying is, and I know, you know, the eternal optimist strikes again, relentless optimist strikes again. Could it possibly be that we've given them enough rope and they will ultimately hang themselves? If not,
well, where are they? Okay. That's you being the horns relentless optimist. Let me in turn be the little ray of fucking sunshine.
As you so wonderfully do.
Where are they going to do it? Mississippi? Mississippi gonna elect a fire breathing liberal progressive Democrat. I mean, I'm in Alabama. I'm in Alabama. It's gonna be a miracle if we can hang on to Doug Jones. So plan on that being down. You know, just kind of plan on it being minus one. I mean, I'd like to see him be reelected, but hell, he's not near ideologically pure enough for the sparkle fart powered unicorn cavalry purity brigade.
Well, did you watch the, you know, well, two things. First of all, take your little victories where you can get them. You know, we're already in control of the House, and hopefully we'll do even better with that in a few months. We're not that many votes away in terms of possibly retaking the Senate, not to a two-thirds majority, God knows. But you got to take your victories where you can, and the other thing is there are always the hard case spots in the country are always going to be the last to see the light, if they ever do. I just wonder if we've reached, when did the Republicans start? 1852 or 1854?
Yeah, the Whigs were petering out and the Know-Nothings were wandering around and the anti-Masonic party was... Yeah,
because you've got to either regain your equilibrium and your true basic values, or you go away, or you become so irrelevant that you may as well go away. And I really think that sometime, in if not now, in the not too distant future, because in the wake of Romney's defeat in 2012, who was the guy who was the head of the he went on to become Trump's spokesman, the guy who was the head of
Rince Priebus, who just got hired by C fucking BS.
Didn't they come out with a manifesto about what would be necessary to forestall?
Oh no, that's a different person. But yeah, that's another piece of news though from today. Rince Priebus has been hired by the Tiffany Network, CBS, because I guess they just didn't have enough shit weasel in their mix.
To do what?
Oh, he's going to be a contributor.
Like a commentator, or
an extraordinary tater.
Well, I've got this sort of hate thing going on with CBS ever since Katie Couric used to have Rush fucking Limbaugh on once a week.
Yeah, that was tough.
It's like, Jesus Christ, can someone, let's get a psychic medium, or John Edwards, not the one who combs his hair, but the other one, and commune with the fucking dead. And see if we can't conjure up the spirits of people like David Brinkley or Chet Huntley or even Walter to a certain extent. Uncle Walter Cronkite, that's the way it is today. What is today? He did that once. But I didn't see it, but somebody told me about it.
Well, you know, still to this day, every now and then I feel the need to read some portion of news copy in my Walter Cronkite voice, just to give it extra gravitas. But you touched on something, and I want to dovetail it with something Tony said in the Facebook group a moment ago. How do you think the country will be physically divided up after this? I fear we're headed to a two-state solution.
How does he mean that, or she mean that?
You know, will this country split? Are we eventually going to reach a point where we just can't get along anymore? And no, we can't, because then Alabama and then Alabama starves to death, and Mississippi starves to death.
He means a literal splitting up of the country.
Yeah, but see, I don't see that happening, because this is. This is one of those unavoidable realities. You've got 70% of the American people who want witnesses called in this trial right now, what's a cover up at the moment.
Yeah.
And that means that there's 30% who are okay with whatever's going on, or something like that, and statistical margins of error and all that bullshit.
Well, to paraphrase, but the stupid you will always have with you, Bob.
Right, but the problem is, where are those 70%? And I don't know how they go about randomizing these poll questions. National polls are utterly meaningless, at least where the presidency is concerned, because of that racist anachronism, the Electoral College. But 70% of the American people want witnesses called, and north of 50% want this little fucker removed from office. So that tells you a little bit about where we are. But
well, remember,
you know, we went in the past. We've gone over that list of the 20 Republican senators who are up for re-election. Now, for instance, Lamar Alexander and Mike Enzi and Pat Roberts in Kansas, Enzi in Wyoming, and Alexander in Tennessee, those three just fucking quit. So those are open seats. There's no incumbency there. In Arizona, you've got a Republican who who did not win her office. She was appointed.
Oh, McSally.
Yeah. And you've got the same obtaining in Georgistan. So we're at five. Then
What about Colorado?
Colorado, Cory Gardner. Iowa, Joni Ernst. Kentucky, Mitch McConnell. South Carolina, Lindsey Graham. And the thing is, if the Democratic Party was any good at this, we would target these places, and we would, you know, it used to be that you didn't go targeting the other side's leadership, but they did that to us a long time ago with Tom Daschle.
What about Kentucky? Did you mention Kentucky?
Yeah, Mitch McConnell.
And yeah. I think I heard that his opponent is raking in money, and I know that money is money, but money.
Well, in South Carolina, Jamie Harrison's raking in money too.
Yeah.
But you also
I
but,
saw him on
but now but there's ago. A different there's a different phenomenon. There's something that has to be taken into account now. It's not just having the money, it's how you spend it. If you recall, in 2016, the airwaves were not awash in Donald Trump ads. The money was spent finagling social media. See what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's money plus brains.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how you would go about it, but for instance, it would be at least worth the money you would spend investigating, for instance, whether all of those maggot coal miners who are standing on railroad tracks have finally learned the error of their fucking ways.
Well, target them, target the soybean farmers, target the middle and lower class people who didn't get the huge permanent tax break. There's a lot of targeting, you know, for electioneering that can be done. It's just a matter of doing it and hiring people who have sense enough to do it. But when I say targeting, I don't mean in the big hack, great documentary on what Netflix.
No, you mean choosing and spending your money wisely.
Yeah, and getting your message that will resonate with these various people that I mentioned and saying, look, you're an intelligent human being. You know what the deal is. You know what you were promised. And you see where you are 4 years later. And not to be condescending or anything, but to say, look, you have as much at stake in the future as anyone else does. And past, after all, is prologue. If you can't look at your own experience and be honest about it and yeah. say before and after, like in the diet ad pictures, you know,
yeah.
we've got to show the guy up for what fools he has taken a lot of people for. And it astounds me that not a single one, or maybe one out of maybe 20 of these people who ran in 2016 on the Republican side, that not one of them, or maybe less than one or two of them, are speaking out against Trump. Lindsey Graham is a fucking hopeless case. And what were all the horrible things that he said about Trump in 2016? And they were true. You didn't have to be a fucking rocket scientist, or as Bob Dylan says, you didn't have to be a weatherman to know which way the wind was blowing. And he did speak the truth. But somebody's got pictures or negatives or videotape or something on that boy, because, you know, maybe the goat is in the green room at Fox News waiting to be interviewed right now as we speak, you know, on permanent green room duty, you know, or he's got
duty.
A collection of little boys' underwear in some closet somewhere. I don't know what Trump has got on Lindsey.
I don't know, but that the little boy's underwear comment just rained hell on dinner in the Pacific time zone. I know that.
Well, I'm sorry, folks. Sometimes you got to call them as you see them, and I try to as much as I can. Well, what I'm saying is it's not a lost cause. It's only lost if you don't behave in a manner consistent with creating a future that works positively and appropriately for all concerned. And we have got plenty of room to operate in between now and November. It comes down to doing it. And now, I don't know how much you've covered this in the last couple of days, because I've been in and out in terms of listening. But, you know, what is the deal with this interview with Hillary?
Oh, please don't make me.
What earthly possible good could that present to us?
If you were watching on Facebook, you would see me doing my best impression of that meme guy going, or here, Captain Picard. Not this shit again.
I didn't hear it.
No, I said if you were watching on Facebook, with the forehead and the hands and the not this shit again.
Yeah.
What I said last night, maybe it was before you tuned in, is that I'd become deeply paranoidly suspicious when I see shit like this pop up at just the right time. And the whole thing started out at the Hollywood Reporter. And then, of course, the New York Times went, and the Daily Beast went, and the Washington Post went,
So who is she in the bag for in terms of Democratic?
She's just getting paid. She's not in the bag for anybody. She's getting paid. Because it all came about as a result of a series that's going to run on Sundance and Hulu.
Well, it's got to be done for someone's benefit who is in opposition currently to Bernie. I mean, isn't that the intent? I mean, it's rather...
Well, it's rather she didn't name any names, but... she referenced the women running for office, though, so that narrows it down to Elizabeth Warren and Amy Klobuchar. I think if you offered her a choice between the two, she would probably default, and it's pure speculation, she'd default to Klobuchar.
Well, yeah. And that's just the thing. It's like last week, and you know, I give, Senator Warren her due, okay? And Amy Klobuchar, too. But I've been around long enough where you see patterns and signs and indications, not too many wonders, but you see signs. And I can tell when something's being run on me in terms of.
And that's what I'm saying. That thing showing up in the Hollywood Reporter felt like a run. I mean, it feels like a job, as in getting jobbed. But I'm being equal opportunity about all of this. You know, the other thing we got was Bernie's interview with the New York Times editorial board, where he acts like he's proud of the fact that he's not nice to people, that he can't treat other people like human beings, that he can't have that he can't have the common decency to say happy birthday to somebody when he knows it's their goddamn birthday. I mean, that's that wasn't other people interpreting him. That was out of his own mouth. I mean, is being a dickhead somehow now a selling point?
I think the editing was slightly suspect on all of the candidates. Plus, they didn't have all of the candidates on.
So I tuned into my filthy morning habit today, and of course, you know, there they are, and they've got Grandpa Joe on there. And they try to do the, hey, let's you and him fight thing over Joe Biden's record on Social Security. And look, there are certain realities that go back 10 years and more of certain Democratic politicians talking about entitlement reform, which is another way of saying fuck people on Social Security. I mean, this is a real line in the sand for me, because my generation has already been fucked once, and I'm not.
Well, it's
Hold on. Because I got to finish this one.
All right, go ahead.
Back in the Reagan 80s, they said, oh, Social Security is going to go broke. And the boomers and the greatest generation got together and they said, hey, let's fuck those Gen Xers. They're just sitting around playing video games. And we will save Social Security that way. So my pink ass, in its pink shirt, well, I mean, the shirt's not on my ass, but you get the idea. Yeah. My pink ass has to work until I am 67 fucking years old to qualify for full Social Security retirement benefits. And I have the boomers and the greatest generation to thank for that. And I don't have boomer Republicans and greatest generation Republicans to thank for that. I got boomer Democrats, boomer Republicans, greatest generation Democrats, greatest generation Republicans. I got Tip fucking O'Neill and I got Ronald fucking Reagan to thank for that. And at that age, two more years fucking matters.
Yeah, well, I know.
And so a few years ago, they were talking about doing it to us again. And those were Democrats talking about chain CPI. And those were Democrats talking about raising the retirement age to 70. Okay?
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
And you know what? Biden doesn't get a pass on that because he was in the middle of it. Now, was the video that somebody put out that Bernie's organization then retweeted, was it dummied up? Yeah, it was. I mean, using an obvious moment of sarcasm from 2018 is it's not just bad politics, it's amateurish politics. And it's shitty and it gives itself away. It's amateurish.
Well, it's also needless. See, part of the problem is, I know that Biden was Obama's vice president, but you're right. His fingerprints are all over during the Bill Clinton era when Bill ushered in that new version of the Democratic Party that was all about making Wall Street happy. Because a lot of labor had been temporarily lost to Reagan back in that godforsaken era.
There's so many different elements to it. My generation has been screwed to the wall, and I don't appreciate it. But okay, let's say everything Biden said about Social Security, he was only kidding. What about the goddamn bankruptcy bill?
Oh yeah, well,
and see, there's all kinds, and again, there's all kinds of Democratic fingerprints all over it.
Well, Delaware, Bob, Delaware, and South Dakota, the two credit card capitals of the country.
Yeah.
You know, about 10 years ago, Frontline did a great hour-long study of the credit card industry and just exactly why Delaware and South Dakota or North Dakota, always get them confused, are the places you look at your mail if you ever get a credit card.
Pay. Oh, I know. And you have to agree to arbitration in Pierre, South Dakota.
Yeah. Yeah. And you got to figure that it was something that Biden supported on behalf of a company that was a corporate constituent in the state of Delaware.
Here's part of the problem, Scott. All right. And I'll use a personal example as a way of advancing the idea. I was, when I was a little kid, I was ticklish. And a lot of people took a great deal of joy in tickling me. And even though you laugh when you're tickled, it is not physically pleasant.
Yes. And sometimes you pee.
Well, we'll just leave that part out of it.
Well, you do. I've seen it happen, Bob.
You have not seen me do that.
No, not you. But
Stop derailing me, damn you. But what happens when you've spent a lifetime being tickled is that even when you're not being tickled anymore, it is still part of your response system, so that if you are touched without your knowledge, you jump toward the ceiling. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And right now you've got a Democratic Party that's very much like that. As James in Illinois just wrote, the hard case Bernie or busters are convinced that the DNC is going to install Hillary. And he's right. And there's a little too much convenience, as you've alluded to in this story popping up when it popped up. And I said a lot of years ago that, or not a lot of years ago, but a couple of years ago, that I know, I just knew, you know, I didn't know, I suspected that there were people who had a lot of money on the line, could make a lot of money out of a Hillary campaign, whispering in her ear and saying, "You got this, Hills. I mean, you'll be young if you run in 20, you'll be younger than Bernie was when he ran in 16. You got this."
Do you think she's
and the Bernie or busters are absolutely just quiveringly paranoid about that? And then, of course, there's the hardcore hilarians who are out there who are still mad at Bernie and feel exactly the same way that Hillary does and did in what she said in that interview. Wouldn't pee on Bernie to put out a goddamn fire. And it's horrible. Because it is those two going back to picking at each other's scabs here 4 years later is the most surefire way to make sure we get four more years of Donald Trump or whoever follows him when they drag him out feet first after the last fucking Big Mac.
You don't think she'll do it, do you? Because, see, I have trouble with
why wouldn't she? Why wouldn't she? I'm not saying she will, but you answer the question. Why wouldn't she?
I would like to think that she has better sense. And
better sense than what? What's to lose?
Election?
She's already done that. How many elections did Alf Landon lose?
Well, look, far be it from me to try to explain the dynamics of Hillary running or not running in 2020. First of all,
I mean, I hate that I'm even talking about this.
Well, and that's where I'm going. I'd rather not even go down that road because it's not profitable for anybody except the people who like her, you know, and who would put their money on that number on the wheel every fucking time. Because there's definitely something in it for them. But we've been down the road of Clinton version of my party, the fucking Democratic Party. Okay? I don't want to go down that road again. I want something different.
I voted for Bernie in the primary, and I voted for Hillary in the general. I just want to be clear about that.
I know that, but this is not about that. This is about not doing something brand new in terms of my party, but rediscovering and recapturing and reinvigorating our values of the past, like FDR.
Let me ask you a question, because now you've moved me over into devil's advocate land, and I hate being in devil's advocate land, because when you play the devil's advocate, you wind up looking like what you're playing. But let me ask.
All right.
You do not get to say, but Elizabeth, you do not get to say, but Bernie. You don't get to say but Amy or but anybody else. What if your choice is between Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton?
God damn, Bob.
What if Biden implodes and there's not a and there's not a clear consensus? Would you take Hillary then? I mean, remember, well, she won the last election by as many, she beat Trump by as many votes as she beat Bernie.
Yeah.
Now, this is not me advocating for her. I just happen to live in fact world.
Well, given that choice, okay, given that choice in 2020 on the Democratic nomination process, my choice comes down to an either or, okay, Hillary or Biden.
Frying pan or fire?
I would have to pick.
Devil, deep blue sea.
And believe me, I would hold my nose and cup my balls in the process of choosing, because I've been down that road too. I had to choose Hillary in 2016. Was she an ideal candidate? No. Was she better than Trump? Yeah.
Does the ideal candidate even exist? No.
Well,
because remember,
right.
remember, if Bernie gets the nomination, they've got notebooks of opposition research on him that are probably as tall as 10 Manhattan phone books stacked on top of each other.
Oh, I'm sure. And the soft money, the PACs and stuff, the Republican machine, not the party Republican, but the Republican leaning corporate entities who pour untold fucking billions into the ads and the campaigns every 4 years or every 2 years. They're just chomping at the bit, no matter who the Democratic nominee is, to sleaze them to the point of unconsciousness. That's another part of the problem.
Hey, I know what. Let's all get behind Mike Bloomberg.
Oh, God, Bob.
Because after all, every time I turn on MSNBC, there's an ad for Mike Bloomberg that says he took on big coal and won. So I've been hallucinating all those fucking mountaintop removal jobs.
I seem to recall a bunch of people in polo shirts with tiki torches saying Jews will not replace us. Do we really want to, even in a silly argumentative sort of frame of mind, do we really want to go down that goddamn road?
Hey, I got Steve calling in here. Let me take him now, Scott.
All right, man. Go ahead.
Later.
See ya.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, Bob. Is Scott still there?
No, no, Scott's not still here. The only way you two could have talked together is if you'd called in on the stress line.
Oh, I didn't knock him off, did I?
Well, no, he just hung up because you were calling in.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about this.
Okay, can I do one thing before we do that?
Sure.
I'm not pushing fundraising real hard, but the fact of the matter is we are in a $390 hole that's going to be a $590 hole tomorrow. And so with just a few minutes left in the program, we're at $390. If anybody wants to take that down a little bit, and it would be wonderful if we could take it down like $190, but that'd be like a miracle. So go ahead.
Okay. First of all, on the Biden or Hillary, I don't think there's any contest. Biden has no record of even remotely winning on any national level, so I would choose Hillary. But in any event, I wanted to call about two things. First of all, I have to be honest. I am so sick of Hillary and her, oh, Bernie didn't support me sufficiently, yada, yada, yada. And here's why.
Because the Pumas.
I was just going to say because of the Pumas. You probably, I think I posted an article somewhere about that. 15% of her supporters in 08 voted for McCain. 12% of Bernie supporters voted for Trump. The other thing that, and I had forgotten about this. The thing that really turned me against Hillary in 08 was when the whole crap about Obama being Muslim was circulating. She was in an interview, and I can see the guy's face. I can't remember who it was who asked her, you know, is he a Muslim? And, you know, putting aside the fact that, so what? But I never will forget one of her responses was no, as far as I know. And that was so Clinton-esque to be able to say, on one hand, I said no, but not quite no, just enough to put some doubt into people's minds. And I remember how I just started thinking about it and remembered how brutal that campaign was and how Bill, frankly, was mocking Obama, making fun of her, fun of him, etc. And I am so sick of people blaming Bernie for her losing. Bernie wasn't the cause of her losing. Frankly, Russia wasn't the cause of her losing.
There were a million different causes.
She didn't go, you know, I'll tell you what, Bob, it would have taken one appearance in Wisconsin, one appearance in Pennsylvania, and one appearance in Michigan, or a couple of rallies would have sealed it. That's all it took.
Yeah, see, I'm not necessarily convinced. If she'd done a dozen rallies in Wisconsin, what Jim Comey did to her would have been sufficient to negate a whole bunch of it. Trump has the nerve to criticize Jim Comey when he owes his fucking presidency to him.
Mm-hmm. I'll agree with that. But let me just say this. It was necessary for her to go there, but not sufficient.
Okay.
To those states. I will concede that point to you. The other thing I wanted to ask, and maybe it's too close to the end, is I posed a question to you about do the senators have are they allowed to question whether or not what he did was an impeachable offense, or when the House passes on that, it's a settled question. Which that can go to the heart of what their standard is for voting. If in fact, once he's impeached, their vote is only comes down to guilty or not guilty. The Constitution does say that the House has the sole power of impeachment. But what does that mean? And I guess it's kind of an academic question.
Well, yeah, in the midst of all this, I have to drop this one on you. Darlene in Connecticut just sent this along, and it does not address the question you just put. And I want you to save that question, because I think it's going to be fantastic on Friday.
Okay.
When we can give it the time that it needs. But check this out. Breaking from ABC News, Tulsi Gabbard files defamation lawsuit against Hillary Clinton.
Jesus Christ.
Now, the funny part of that is that it was poorly, it was significantly underreported, but Hillary never said that she was, you know, controlled by Russia or groomed by Russia. If you go and you look at the corrections, it was inaccurately reported, and what she actually said in the recording, at least according to what I was able to find out, is that she said there was a candidate being groomed by the Republicans.
And along those lines, you know as well as I do that when you bring a defamation suit, you have to state what was the statement that was defamatory.
Right.
It doesn't name her.
No.
And I think
if anything, it's a goddamn admission.
Yeah, I was just going to say, really, she didn't name you, but you knew it was targeted. Well, you thought it was targeted.
You're the lawyer. Could you just answer the lawsuit by sending an MP3 of Carly Simon singing "You're So Vain"?
You could.
That was good. Really?
Yeah. That would qualify. That might not qualify as an appearance, but you could certainly do it. Or I would prefer the Ted Lieu.
You're so vain. You probably think this quote is about you. Yeah. You're so vain. Yeah.
Oh, perfect. Perfect.
Oh, and hey, things did get a little bit better. We are now down to $330 to go, thanks to Rusty. And thank you very kindly to James in Illinois. So, yay. That makes things, so tomorrow's 5:30 now, so that makes things a little bit better. I'm beginning to sweat a little bit because, you know, got to drive home and all of that stuff.
Right. Well.
But no, that's a fantastic question, and I want us to give it the time that it deserves, because I've been chewing on it since you sent it to me. And I know that they are setting up, I know the Republicans are setting up the claim, because this is what they have to do to mollify somebody with the intellectual skills of an oxygen deprived 3-year-old, which is what Trump is. Mm-hmm. They're setting up the claim that once the Republicans have acquitted him, that he was that he never has to think he was impeached anymore.
It's like in a criminal trial, rather than not guilty, you're innocent.
Right, and of course we don't have, the United States judicial system does not have a finding of not guilt of innocent.
Nope.
I think Scotland does, maybe. But it just means that the proof was insufficient. You walk away acquitted. You do not walk away innocent. But I guarantee you that I guarantee you that's where it's going.
Well, listen, you need to go because you got shit to do and to start preparing.
I'm packing and cleaning a little bit every night, leaving this lovely little apartment. But
looks like we do have a decent little roundtable on Friday to talk about that issue.
Yeah, I sincerely hope we do. And or if you want to do it tomorrow, that's cool too. Although I suspect we'll probably still be watching some impeachment.
Well, I think you're right, though, to do it on Friday, because then we can get a lot of different people chiming in, get Rick and Steve from Georgistan, and I'd love to hear what Darlene says about that. I'd love to hear what Tracy might say about it. I'd love to hear what all of the non-lawyers would say about that. Just to throw it out there and see what, you know, because I always I actually prefer a lot of times talking with non-lawyers about legal questions, because
you get a little more clarity.
You get a little more clarity, and you get some kind of practical, for the masses. And I'm not saying that in a pejorative way. I mean, you get that.
Yeah. And I don't know if he's caught. I don't know if you caught this or not, Steve. But Moscow Mitch is doing everything in his power to make this so unpalatable that every senator will want to be done with it. Have you seen the rules? No texting, no electronic devices, and members of the Senate can drink only water or milk during the proceedings. Isn't that the damnedest thing?
Not much leads me to speak. It's just like going back to my list of emotions. I just don't know what to think anymore.
And by the way, Darlene reminds us, yes, she is a lawyer.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. Oh yeah.
Okay.
Well, Steve,
I still want to hear from
him. Right, I understand. So We'll roll out of here. Adam Schiff is speaking. I guess I'll go back to watching that, and everybody else will too. And I think we will have a Jim Dandy conversation on Friday if you can get to it.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to get to it.
All right.
Listen, you have a good evening, and stay warm now. Get some sleep, do what you need to do, and make sure you're safe on the way home this weekend.
Indeed.
But we'll talk before then. But I'm just,
okay. Thanks, Steve.
Take care. Have a good night now.
Bye now. It's our buddy Steve from New York. And it's time to get out of here. And I want to thank everybody who jumped in to help out digging out of the hole. Like I said, it's down to 330 now. And on the overnight, if you're listening to this program and you'd like to help take it down some more, it would be massively appreciated. And because 3:30, 5:30 tomorrow, 7:30 on Friday. And I do. I get a little antsy, especially getting ready to drive and knowing that I'm going to be going home and buying a new damn desktop. Black Staggett, not Paul Franzlack. Let's see. I want to share one more email. Give Lady B pride of place on the way out the door. An answer to Steve in New York's question. I sit here trying and failing to think of a way to describe how I feel, Steve. Basically, well, at least us in the Horn family are all kinds of bewildered and confused and even a little bit discombobulated. Haha, see what I did there? Missed you plenty, Bob. We were discombobulated. Yeah. Anyway, I just hate all the gaslighting, the lying, the outright devil-may-care attitude that the Republicans have towards such a serious thing is sickening. Money cannot be worth the destruction of this country. For what does it profiteth a man to sell his own to what is it? What profiteth a man if he gain the whole world but lose his own soul? And you know, just editorially, because I owe a little time here. I owe a week's worth of programming. Who are we kidding? But it's something I was thinking about. Say what you will about how the Democratic senators treated the impeachment trial of Bill Clinton. This much is true. They treated it seriously. And you even had some Democrats out there wringing hands, and some of them excoriated Bill Clinton for a consensual sex act that was none of their goddamn business in the first fucking place. I mean, you had Holy Joe Lieberman. Holy Joe Lieberman weaseled his way into a vice presidential nomination that probably helped sink Al Gore's presidential ambitions. Because he was willing to say that what Bill Clinton did was, by Jesus, wrong. There is not a single Republican who will say that anything that Donald Trump did was wrong. When a 5-year-old could tell you that lying is wrong. Republicans seem to have the ability to get worked up about lying about a blowjob. But lying about a phone call, different story. Anyway, back to what Lady B said. On the other hand, I get it. I mean, I'm broke most of the time, and I'm 51 years old, nowhere near where I ever imagined I would be. If somebody offered me $100,000 right now to testify in Trump's favor, it's hard to say. I'd like to think I'd have more integrity than that, but sometimes I'm desperate. At night, I lay awake asking God why. I got my health. I've got a great loving family, and I haven't lost a relative in about 3 years. I hope that continues, but again, I'm flat broke. If it wasn't for my twin sister, things such as car repairs, the furnace breaking down in the house, I would be totally screwed. I guess what I'm saying is I kind of get it, but there's still a part of me that thinks maybe something good will come out of this. Maybe somebody with real influence will step forward and do the right thing. Maybe like in the movies, you know? Somebody has to step forward. Somebody has to be brave. Somebody has to basically take the metaphorical bullet for the rest of us to save this country. I don't know who it'll be. But whoever they are, know this, to quote Seeley from The Color Purple, this life is temporary. Heaven lasts forever. You got your money, your retirement's set. You may not be a billionaire, but upper middle class is not a bad thing. Sell Trump out. Do the right thing so you can go to heaven. Then again, I also think of Miss Sophia, who snapped back, you better bust Mr. in the head now and worry about heaven later. Maybe it's time for the pitchforks and torches. Signed, Lady, I have to work until I die. Thanks, Reagan voters. B. Yeah. The boomers and the greatest generation thought that they'd just go ahead and fuck us back in the 80s. We'd never figure it out. Yeah, I think we figured it out. But maybe one of the arguments, maybe one of the things we need to learn is not to let it ever happen to anybody again beneath us, below us, behind us. Robert in Australia says, subject line, V for Vendetta. In 2006, the film Idiocracy came out. Years later, we were saying it wasn't meant to be a documentary. President Camacho's State of the Union. Shit, I know shit's bad right now with all that starving bullshit and dust storms and so on. At least President Camacho can read a teleprompter and doesn't sniff. And now we have Trump, who can't read a teleprompter and sniffs. There was another film that came out in 2006, V for Vendetta, in which the USA has destroyed itself and become a failed, plague-ridden country. I don't want to be saying it wasn't meant to be a documentary in 5 years. Robert from Oz. P.S. Why I said there was no Rolling Stones music on the Voyager record in the film Starman. They used Rolling Stones, I Can't Get No Satisfaction. The alien knows the song, and a Voyager record is found in its crashed ship. The record does have, amongst others, Johnny B. Goode, performed by Chuck Berry. Ah, thank you for that, Robert. You know, just to add to what Robert said, there's a company out there now called Soylent that's actually selling food replacement beverages. They just haven't gotten around to green yet. And that is still a disturbing movie to watch. All right, thanks everybody for joining in. I appreciate it so very much. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thank you. Each and every one of you who join in the conversation in whatever way you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.